Do you suffer with chronic pain? Are you taking risky over-the-counter or prescription anti-inflammatory drugs? Living with pain can cause depression, overeating, anxiety, loss of sleep, and low quality of life. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a better natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals. Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposome technology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. It contains powerful antioxidant properties and plant-based curcumin used to possibly reduce inflammation and block proteins that trigger swelling and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216. Or go to myfuturefarm.com. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Don't live with pain when there's an all-natural, science-based remedy that works without adverse side effects. Get free shipping on all of your orders at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're talking about intermittent fasting, specifically TRF, time-restricted feeding. Today's guest, Carolyn Gazelle, and I co-wrote an article in Natural Medicine Journal on the subject of intermittent fasting. And in part one, we kind of laid the groundwork for discussion in part two. And now we're going to talk about practical application to certain situations. So yes, it can help with weight loss, but that's not all. There's some very interesting data about its application to a variety of situations. So let's talk first about cardiovascular disease. What did your research reveal when you looked at the relationship of TRF to lipid metabolism and cardiovascular risk?
Well, it is pretty remarkable. It does influence LDL cholesterol, triglycerides, and total cholesterol, and it helps obviously reduce the bad cholesterol, increase the good cholesterol, and then reduce overall total cholesterol. It's also, as a result of that, can inhibit formation of atherosclerotic plaque, which is important. And it also, the study that I really enjoyed was with patients with metabolic syndrome. So metabolic syndrome is a cluster of conditions that put people at high risk of developing heart disease. So you're already talking about an at-risk population. They fasted for over 14 hours, and they had a significant reduction, not only in body fat and waist circumference, but also in blood pressure. So we are seeing that it can help with resting heart rate, blood pressure, and it can help increase heart rate variability. So the cardiovascular benefits are pretty significant.
That's impressive. What about cancer? There's some really interesting work by Walter Longo, who's been a guest on this program, and you're very familiar with Dr. Longo's research, looking at the relationship between the fasting mimicking diet and cancer, and specifically the effectiveness of conventional therapies. He urges that you team fasting with conventional treatments like chemo.
Yeah, and I mean the big home run here is for somebody who's on chemotherapy or who's had chemotherapy in the past, you want to do two things. You want to enhance the benefits of the chemotherapy so it can kill the cancer cells. And then you also want to reduce the side effects of the chemotherapy because chemotherapy drugs are very potent drugs. So if you can do those two things, that's a huge home run. If there was a drug that could do those two things, it would be a miracle drug. In 2019, now this one wasn't done by Dr. Longo and his colleagues. It was another one that was done that showed that when you combine time-restricted feeding with chemotherapy, you will in fact increase the efficacy of the drug, not all chemotherapy drugs, obviously, but some of them. And you're also going to be reducing the side effects because you're protecting the healthy cells from DNA damage. Now that's pretty remarkable. There was another study involving breast cancer risk And in that study, it showed that there were improved biomarkers that indicated that you would be at less risk of developing breast cancer if you follow this diet. And I want to tell you, Dr. Hoffman, as a woman who's had ovarian cancer, our family has also been studied by Creighton University. And back in the day, we were found to be one of the largest known carriers of the BRCA gene. So we have, it's a very large Midwest family that I come from. And so I still have healthy breasts and I want to keep my healthy breasts. But I also want to do everything I can to reduce my risk of developing breast cancer, including screening and everything that I'm supposed to be doing. This diet happens to be one of those things that will potentially help reduce my risk of developing breast cancer. So
because of its impact on insulin resistance and IGF-1, known risk factors, especially for some of these reproductive cancers, cancers of the breast, the prostate seem to be especially amenable to these strategies.
Exactly. And we know that if you are in an insulin resistant state and you have poor glycemic regulation and control, you are definitely at increased risk of developing breast cancer. Also, if you have chronic inflammation, you're at increased risk of developing. Now, this particular study didn't look at the CRP or some of the other inflammatory markers. I don't think it did. But we know that this diet has some anti-inflammatory effects. So yeah, there's several reasons why it's potentially good to reduce cancer risk.
Let's move on to diabetes, because there's some contradictory research on this subject. I've got a headline here, intermittent fasting, quote, not benign for patients with diabetes. This according to a viewpoint published in Journal of the American Medical Association. They say there are not enough studies. They're also concerned about hypoglycemia, weakness, headaches, dizziness. You know, they're not sure that that's such a good idea. On the other hand, there's some studies that say that it's ideal, especially for type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, of course, you have to be careful. But if you don't take insulin, I mean, insulin can lower your blood sugar, and if you don't eat, you're in trouble. But this study, early time-restricted feeding improves insulin sensitivity, blood pressure, and oxidative stress, even without weight loss in men with pre-diabetes. So that's kind of cool. You don't even have to lose weight. You get your metabolism is better. So if you're if you're a little disappointed that you haven't lost 25 pounds yet on this, Carolyn, you're so much better off. You know, even if the scale does not give you that feedback.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that what we found, you know, that I would say that the research is not robust in this area, but we did find research stating that it can, in fact, be beneficial for people. And as you mentioned, it is type 2 diabetes specifically.
Yeah.
The one thing that I do often have people, for example, my sister seems to have blood sugar issues, and she'll be the first one to say, oh, I could never do that. You know, my blood sugar drops in the morning and I have to eat. Now, my understanding, Dr. Hoffman, is that with a person who has that, and she does not have type 2 diabetes, she just has some blood
she's
sugar
erratic
issues.
Erratic blood sugar.
Exactly. So my understanding is that if in fact a person like that could stick with the intermittent fasting and their time really restricted feeding, if they could stick with it, that it would actually help them level out their blood sugar issues. Is that correct?
Yeah, generally there's an adaptation period. And at first, you know, there is definitely some deprivation. And, you know, I've learned this through bitter experience during my clinical practice of over 30 years, is that initially some of the patients really hate you. You know, they just hate on you. And, I had a patient come back to me this a few years ago. I remember this conversation distinctly. She said, I cursed you every morning for the first couple of weeks, but I withheld, you know, calling you and to complain. And then something kicked in for me, and suddenly I developed complete equanimity to carbs. This is on a low-carb, time-restricted feeding regimen. But there was a real withdrawal period. I mean, people are hooked on carbs, and partly mm-hmm. insulin metabolism, it's partly habit and taste, and, you know, the emotional component of carbs. And also, you know, there's a neuroscience of carbs. I mean, some people really go into like a serotonin deprivation without carbs. There's no question. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, again, you got to give it some time. Some people may not ultimately adapt, and they may have to do some modified version of this, but it usually does kick in. So yeah. I do highly recommend it for diabetics, the non-insulin dependent diabetics, that is.
Yeah, and I also I think that we should talk about people who may be at high risk of developing type 2 diabetes, because mm-hmm. I feel like this diet could be an effective tool to use to reduce risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's if you're headed down that path, mm-hmm. Pre-diabetic or just have a family history or whatnot, this diet would be something to consider for sure.
Well, as you well know, the NHANES study recently evaluated the metabolic fitness of Americans, and they looked at a variety of criteria. They look at, you know, waist and blood pressure, and if people are on medications and blood sugar and so on and so on and so on and so on. And it turned out that only 12% of adult Americans are, quote, metabolically fit. So that means that we're vastly underdiagnosing the problem. People with frank diabetes may represent 20% of the people who ultimately are at risk of the consequences of metabolic syndrome, perhaps without ever developing full-blown diabetes or being properly diagnosed. So,
yeah, I would agree.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by a suite of professional-grade products from Protocol for Life Balance, which helps support optimal cardiovascular health. Ubiquinol, natokinase, and MK7K2. They play a central role in cellular energy production and maintaining proper blood flow and arterial elasticity, but they're only available from healthcare practitioners. But they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance for more information and to order. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you, with great guests like today's guest, Carolyn Gazella. Now back to her. So moving on to cognitive benefits, this is really interesting. There's this thing called neuroplasticity, and there's actually some literature on TRF and improved memory and learning.
Yeah, I find this fascinating as well. But this is another case where what you do can affect yourself and your health on a very deep cellular level. So this, now we're talking, of course, cells in the brain, which impact brain function. So, you know, it helps enhance that synaptic plasticity. So it'll help your brain cells fire better. It also helps with neurogenesis, which is the creation of new brain cells. And yeah, I mean, we've focused on a couple of studies. You know, one was in 2016, and it showed that it improved, this diet improved verbal memory, verbal fluency, executive function, and global cognition. I mean, as you age, I mean, as I mentioned, I'm 58, and, you know, I really want to protect my brain function. I want to protect my brain health, and I want to do everything I can to do that, because that speaks to the quality of my life as I move forward. So the fact that this has such a direct impact on my cognition, I think it's pretty impressive. Now, have I noticed that my memory is better and that I have
more clarity, more focus?
I think I am. You know, it could be placebo effect, Dr. Yeah. Hoffman, but yeah. I do feel like I am a little bit sharper mm-hmm. than when I was eating the other way. So yeah, I think that's a pretty you know. And that some other studies are mostly cellular study or animal studies, but showed that when the animals had this type of diet, mm-hmm. That they had improved memory and learning, mm-hmm. which is I want to have a good memory, and I want to be able to continue to learn.
At the very least, I think it keeps you sharper and less lethargic, because I think so many people are just sort of blown away with overconsumption that they just, you know, much of the day they have sort of a syrupy feeling. You know, hunger may sharpen focus and attention, you know, to the extent that it's not overdone, you know.
Yeah, and you know, in that Mattson paper that you and I both love, the authors also state that it can help reduce stress-related damage to the brain. Mm. And there's no question that right now we're under a lot of stress. These mm-hmm. are very difficult times. Mm-hmm. And that we also know that stress can affect our health, but it also can affect brain function.
Yep.
And if we can do something that can help reduce that stress-related brain damage that could potentially occur, I think that it's a good thing. So yeah,
it attenuates that cortisol. Is that one of the mechanisms, or it has any inflammatory effect, or you know, both?
Yeah, I think probably both. I am not aware of any kind of cortisol effect, mm-hmm. so that okay. I would have to look into.
Yeah.
But definitely with the inflammation, and then as you mentioned, you know, when your brain is under stress, your the cells mm-hmm. in your brain are yep. impacted. So if this provides a protective effect mm-hmm. to those cells in the brain, mm-hmm. it's going to help reduce that stress-related damage. So yeah, I think that. But the cortisol thing would be interesting to look into for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They may be part of the mechanism. And finally, mm-hmm. Anti-inflammatory, you know, so many people suffer from inflammatory disorders. In fact, it's thought to be a hallmark of aging, is that as your immune system senesces, is that a word? As you become, you develop immunosenescence, you have lowered resistance, but at the same time, your body attacks itself more proclivity to autoimmune conditions and inflammatory conditions. And there's something about this TRF that may have an impact on things like C-reactive protein and symptoms of tender and swollen joints. And there's a big trial underway at Germany's largest university hospital in Berlin to evaluate the effects of fasting on rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah, I mean, the study that you and I looked at for our paper was a 2019 multicenter study with patients with psoriatic arthritis, mm-hmm. which is probably the cousin to rheumatoid arthritis, so it's an autoimmune condition. This fast was 17 hours, so it was a little bit longer, mm-hmm. But they improved significantly when it came to improved tender and swollen joints, pain, discomfort, fatigue. And then you mentioned that inflammatory marker of C-reactive protein.
When you can get that C-reactive protein level down, that's when you can get all these horrible symptoms to be reduced, like the pain and the discomfort and the fatigue and the swollen joints. And that's big for a person who has those conditions.
Yeah. So clearly there's promise there for, you know, some of the most common afflictions known to man, for which we don't have a lot of really good solutions. Drug therapies that have toxicity. Certainly this could be, at the very least, an adjunct to conventional therapy for some of these inflammatory disorders like rheumatoid arthritis, perhaps even multiple sclerosis, and on it goes. So many itises, so many inflammatory conditions. Okay, so now let's talk about, you know, and I think we have to go here because this is not for everyone. There are certain what is called in medicine contraindications, circumstances where caution needs to be exercised in applying TRF, or it may not be appropriate. So what are some of those?
Well, I think, you know, obviously it may not be appropriate for children, women who are pregnant or nursing, and any population that has really high nutrient needs. That would be a first place to start. But there are other populations as well. I mean, the one that I find most intriguing and really, really quite important are people who have or are experiencing eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who has a history of an eating disorder like anorexia or bulimia, you know, whenever you restrict any kind of dietary restriction for a person with that kind of history or who's in the throes of that kind of condition, can really get them to spiral. Right.
You're sort of reinforcing
into,
the wrong message. You know, it's like more restriction, bring
exactly.
it on, more restriction, you know, more rules, and then it can boomerang
right.
into
exactly.
Binging or, you know, or a real tailspin into very, very serious food deprivation.
Right, exactly. And I think that that is something important. And the scientific literature does bear that out. There's not a lot of research in this area, but honestly, it makes logical sense. So I don't know that we need a lot of studies with this one. I think that that's the caution there. Any type of history of an eating disorder, or if you're in the throes of an eating disorder, this would not be the diet for you. People, you know, who are nutritionally compromised due to a particular condition, like inflammatory bowel disease, can wreak havoc with the nutritional status of that individual. So it may not be appropriate for that person. Certainly, mm-hmm. if somebody with inflammatory bowel disease or who has malabsorption issues, they would want to do this diet under the care of an experienced physician. And then finally, I would say, we talked about cancer, and we talked about the benefits of reducing risk of cancer and utilizing this diet with chemotherapy. But there's a condition called cachexia, where the cancer patient gets basically malnourished and is losing muscle mass. And a person who is in that state should probably use caution with this particular diet as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, as you mentioned, the short bowel syndrome, where people have less intestinal surface and they have to maintain a more consistent caloric intake just to keep ahead of the inefficiency of their absorption of nutrients. That might be a problem. And then, you know, just to reiterate, if you have type 1 diabetes, or if you are on, if you have type 2 diabetes and you're taking an oral medication or an injectable medication, not insulin, that significantly lowers your blood sugar, well, you have to do this in conjunction with an experienced physician, because, you know, when you don't eat and you take something that simultaneously lowers your blood sugar, whether it's insulin or medication, you could become hypoglycemic and, you know, become weak and woozy and, you know, even lose consciousness. So that can be a problem.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But nonetheless, I mean, I think that in my personal opinion, I think it remains a very, very important tool for the management of especially diabetics who are suffering from insulin resistance and overweight. And, you know, this could really be a sea change for them.
Right. I agree with that. I think that our conclusion in our paper to other healthcare professionals like yourself was that this could be a very effective tool with certain patients, and that it could be a game changer for mm-hmm. some of them, and it should be looked at with a lot of serious consideration.
And that was the point of the very prominent placement of that article that we quote in our review, the Mattson article in the New England Journal of Medicine. For those who want to do a deeper dive on the subject, check out New England Journal of Medicine. I believe that this came out in 2019, Mattson, Mattson, intermittent fasting. Google it, find it. You know, you'll read all the technical information about some of the benefits if you want to do a deep dive on the subject. Find our article at Natural Medicine Journal, right?
Yep, naturalmedicinejournal.com. And that Mattson reference is reference number 5. So you can scroll down and you can get the full reference and mm-hmm. Just do a cut and paste and you'll be able to find that Mattson piece.
It'll take you right there. That's great. Before we sign off, tell us about 5 to Thrive. That's still an ongoing podcast and radio program.
Yes, I actually do two podcasts now. I do one podcast with Dr. Al Schuler, and that is a 5 to Thrive Live every Tuesday night, but it's also available on Pandora and Spotify and iHeart, anywhere that you can find your podcast, you'll find it. Just look for Five to Thrive Live. We focus on ways to reduce cancer risk and support cancer survivors and their caregivers. It's a lot of, we always are interviewing really interesting experts. Dr. Hoffman, you've been on several times, and I believe we have a show coming up with you this fall, which I'm excited about. So yeah, that is, the podcast that I do for patients or consumers. And I also do a Natural Medicine Journal podcast now, for healthcare professionals. So if you're a healthcare professional and you want to stay up on the latest in integrative medicine, same thing. You can go to Pandora or Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts and type in Natural Medicine Journal, and you will find those podcasts. We've been doing a lot of COVID-19 updates. I have a new COVID-19 update coming out tomorrow. Wednesday. You can look for that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, you are just so prolific, and you know, congratulations on your wonderful contributions to the field of integrative medicine. And I will say that in collaborating with you, your science is rigorous. You always insist on an evidence basis for whatever statements you're making, and I really think that that's a wonderful, wonderful way to proceed in this field, which is, you know, often critiqued. You know, where's the science? Where's the journal articles? Where's the proof? You certainly stand up to scrutiny when you write about stuff. So it's been always been a pleasure working with you on this.
Yes, thank you. We're sticklers. And as you said, it reflects on the entire industry. So we want to be a leader in that area.
Indeed. Well, thank you, Carolyn Gazella, for joining us. If you want to look her up, it's Carolyn with a K, Gazella, G-A-Z-E-L-L-A. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.